Right now, at the center of our Milky Way galaxy sits this massive abyss. It's about 4 million times heavier than our sun.
Yeah, a supermassive black hole. Or, well, what we think is a black hole.
Exactly. We've all grown up with this idea, that a black hole is the ultimate cosmic trash can. Gravity just crunches matter down into absolute nothingness. But what if we've been looking at it completely wrong?
Right. What if the universe actually strictly forbids black holes from forming?
Because it just refuses to let a single piece of information be deleted.
Which is a concept that, honestly, completely upends decades of astrophysics. I mean, it's a total paradigm shift. It turns everything we thought we knew about gravitational collapse inside out.
It really does. So for this deep dive, our mission is to unpack this radical theoretical framework known as mutual stability. We're going to look at a missing mathematical puzzle piece in Einstein's equations, a brand new hypothetical particle, and the frankly mind-bending reality of what might actually be sitting at the center of our galaxy.
Yeah, it's where high-level physics meets information theory.
And it redefines how we look at the entire universe. So to really grasp the solution here, we first have to understand why standard physics just sort of hits a wall.
Right, the problem always starts with Einstein's general relativity.
Which is a beautiful set of equations, right?
Oh, absolutely. But as beautiful as they are for describing gravity, they fail spectacularly when you push them to their absolute limits. General relativity predicts that when a really massive star collapses, it just crushes down into a singularity.
Right, like a single point of infinite density.
Exactly, surrounded by an event horizon.
And the sources point out that this isn't just a mathematical dead end, it actively breaks the golden rule of quantum mechanics.
Yeah, the preservation of information.
Right. Quantum mechanics dictates that information cannot be destroyed, ever. But if matter falls into a black hole singularity, that quantum information is, well, it's seemingly wiped from the observable universe.
Gravity's collapse equation essentially destroys quantum mechanics, which, creates a massive paradox.
So how does the mutual stability framework solve this?
Well, it introduces a new core rule. The idea is that every fundamental equation in physics must stabilize every other equation.
Okay.
So if gravity is trying to break quantum mechanics by causing this massive information loss, quantum mechanics can't just, passively sit there and allow it.
It has to fight back.
Right. It must exert a stabilizing physical force to push back and prevent the black hole from ever forming in the first place.
But saying quantum mechanics just fights back sounds a bit, I don't know, almost like magic. I mean, Einstein's equations are famously ironclad. How can you alter his math to allow for this pushback without just breaking the rest of physics?
Well, standard general relativity has no mathematical mechanism to prevent horizon formation. So the framework introduces a missing term to fix this. It creates what's called the stability-corrected Einstein equation.
And the key player in this new equation is something called the stability tensor, which sounds like some heavy jargon.
It does, yeah.
Yeah.
But mathematically, a tensor is really just an array of numbers that describes how physical properties interact. This specific one, it's a rank 2 tensor, is constructed directly from the quantum state of the collapsing star.
So it's tied directly to the quantum information.
Exactly. Its whole job is to measure exactly how much quantum information is resisting that gravitational compression. It uses this mathematical operation called a double functional derivative.
Okay, wait, let's translate that double functional derivative into something practical. Because when I was reading through the source material, I kept thinking about like compressing a massive zip file on a computer.
Oh, that's a great way to look at it.
Right, because in standard general relativity, you just keep compressing the file, making it smaller and smaller, until eventually the file corrupts. The data is just gone.
Right, that's your classic singularity.
But with the stability tensor, it's like the computer's operating system steps in. The double functional derivative is essentially a built-in monitoring system.
Yes, monitoring the complexity.
Yeah. So as the file gets dangerously dense, the OS calculates the complexity of the data and it pops up an error code that says, file too complex to compress further. And it physically halts the program to save the data.
That's spot on. The mass acts as a negative pressure opposing the compression. It measures how the information content, what we call the information functional, responds as gravity warps and shrinks the space around it.
So as the physical volume decreases,
The density of information increases, and the tensor translates that increasing density into a literal physical negative pressure that pushes outward against gravity.
wait, I have to stop you there because I think a lot of you listening might be stuck on this exact point. We usually think of information as something abstract, right? Like a password or a memory or just code on a hard drive.
Sure.
Are you saying abstract data has a physical pressure? Like, how does a collection of ones and zeros physically push back against the gravity of a collapsing star?
Well, that forces us to redefine what information actually means at the quantum level. In physics, information isn't abstract at all. It is a fundamental physical property of the arrangement of particles.
Okay.
We measure this using something called Bekenstein-Hawking entropy, which calculates the exact information capacity of a given volume of space.
So every physical space has a hard data limit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. And as the star collapses, all of its particles, along with all their quantum properties, you know, their spins, their positions, their entangled relationships, they all get violently packed into this shrinking volume.
So the information density just skyrockets.
It absolutely skyrockets. Now, in physics, pressure is fundamentally tied to energy and volume. The mathematical framework here calculates this information pressure as the derivative of free energy with respect to volume.
Meaning, as the volume drops, the energy required to contain that information spikes.
Imagine a steam kettle.
Okay.
When you boil water, the molecules move faster, their energy increases, and because they're confined to the volume of the kettle, they exert pressure on the walls.
Right, the steam wants to escape.
Exactly. But in a collapsing star, it's not thermal heat causing this ultimate pressure. It's the sheer density of quantum information fighting for space. As the volume shrinks, the free energy related to maintaining that intricate quantum data just spikes dramatically.
So the tighter you pack the physical particles,
the more aggressive the physical pushback becomes.
Wow. So it's a physically tangible force.
Very tangible. As the collapsing matter reaches extreme quantum thresholds, this information pressure hits what's known as the Planck pressure. We are talking about 4.6 times 10 to the power of 113 pascals.
I mean, I can't even wrap my head around a number that large, 10 to the 113 pascals. But why is that specific number the limit? Why couldn't the gravity of a really massive star just push slightly harder and overcome it?
Because at the Planck scale, the very fabric of space-time begins to break down.
Break down how?
Well, the geometry of space and time becomes so warped and chaotic that the physical concepts of volume and pressure cease to mathematically exist.
Oh.
Yeah, you cannot compress something if the space it occupies no longer has a measurable dimension. So that number 10 to the 113 pascals is the physical ceiling of reality.
Nothing can overcome it.
Nothing. When a collapsing object hits that threshold, the universe simply cannot allow further compression.
Okay, but if there is this immense physical pressure pushing back against a star, there has to be a mechanism doing the pushing, right?
Yeah.
A fundamental force needs a particle to carry it.
Right. Quantum mechanics dictates there must be a quantum mediator. And that brings us to the missing particle in this entire framework, the stabilization boson.
Represented by the Greek letter phi.
Exactly. The phi field.
And the texts give the stabilization boson a very specific resume. It has zero spin, which makes it a scalar particle.
Right. And a scalar particle with zero spin means it mediates a strictly repulsive force. It pushes things apart.
Okay.
Furthermore, its mass is the Planck mass, which is incredibly heavy for a fundamental particle. It's about 2.18 times 10 to the negative 8 kilograms.
Which doesn't sound heavy to us, but for a particle, that's massive.
It's enormous. And because it's so heavy, its range is strictly limited to the tiny Planck length. It only operates at the absolute microscopic scale.
But the strangest detail to me is how it interacts with other matter. Doesn't care about electric charge or magnetic charge. The sources say it couples to information charge.
Right.
Information charge, like electrical charge, but for data. Are you saying this particle reacts based purely on how much data an object holds?
Yes, and that is the defining revolutionary feature of the phi field. Under normal conditions, like in everyday objects or even normal stars, this field is completely dormant.
So if we use a nightclub analogy, standard forces like electromagnetism are like a bouncer checking your ID or your dress code.
Sure.
But the stabilization boson doesn't care what you're wearing or how heavy you are. It's a bouncer that only cares about how many unique thoughts the crowd is having.
I love that.
If everyone in the club is identical and spread out, the bouncer just sleeps. But the moment the crowd gets dangerously packed and the amount of unique overlapping quantum data reaches the breaking point, the bouncer wakes up.
Right. It approaches the Bekenstein bound, which is the absolute maximum amount of quantum information that can physically fit in a given volume.
And the second the crowd hits that density threshold, the bouncer physically pushes the walls outward. It couples directly to the density of the data.
Exactly. As matter collapses and hits that critical information density, the phi field activates and grows. The repulsive force scales up proportionally to the density of the information.
And they eventually match.
The mathematics reveal this remarkable stalemate. Just as the collapsing star is about to shrink past its Schwarzschild radius.
Which is the exact point where an event horizon would normally form and trap light forever.
Right. Just as it hits that point, the repulsive force of the stabilization boson perfectly matches the gravitational force pulling it in.
So the collapse halts. Permanently.
The Phi field prevents gravitational collapse entirely. An event horizon never forms. The singularity never happens.
Okay, but if the collapse stops before an event horizon forms, what is left? I mean, if it has a physical surface and it's catching all this compressed quantum data but not destroying it, then it has to be storing it somehow.
Right.
Are we basically looking at a giant spherical hard drive floating in space?
We are looking at a completely new phase of matter. It's known as a stabilized compact object, or an SKO.
Yeah. Been SKO.
Yeah. And to contrast this with the black holes we've all been so terrified of, a black hole has a singularity where density is infinite, an event horizon that acts as a point of no return, and it seemingly destroys quantum information.
Right.
And SKO has no singularity, no event horizon, and most importantly, zero information is lost.
The physical scale of these objects is just hard to process. The math shows that a solar mass SKO, so an object with the mass of our sun, has a radius of about 10 to the negative 23 meters.
It's unimaginably small.
That is 13 orders of magnitude smaller than what a standard black hole's radius would be. But, and this is good, it is still 15 orders of magnitude larger than the Planck length. So it is a defined, physical, extended object with a tangible surface.
And what happens on that surface is perhaps the most profound part of this entire framework. Because the SKO isn't just a dense, dead rock of matter. The surface actually functions as an active quantum processor.
Literally a computer.
Literally. The SKO takes all the matter that accretes onto it, gas, dust, entire planets, and it encodes the quantum information of that matter onto the degrees of freedom on its microscopic surface.
Wow.
It then processes that encoded information through a mechanism called unitary evolution.
Okay, unitary evolution is a buzzword that comes up a lot in these papers. What does it actually mean for the data itself?
Well, in quantum mechanics, unitary evolution is the rule that probabilities must always add up to 100%, or 1.
Right.
It guarantees that the quantum state of a system evolves deterministically over time. In simple terms, it means the process is completely reversible.
So if you have the output, you can work backwards.
Exactly. You can perfectly calculate the past. It ensures no data is ever lost, overwritten, or corrupted.
That's incredible. And the processing speed, the sources say a solar mass SKO processes data at a rate bounded by something called the Margulis-Levitin theorem.
Yes, which calculates the maximum rate of quantum operations based on available energy.
And for an SKO, it processes data at 10 to the 76th operations per second.
Just to give you some context, for 10 to the 76th operations per second, it is 10 to the 50th times faster than the absolute fastest classical supercomputers we have on Earth today.
It's a quantum computer of just unimaginable power.
It really is.
But, you know, any computer processing data has to output something, right? Traditional black hole theory suggests they slowly leak this random chaotic energy called Hawking radiation. Does an SKO output something readable?
Yes, and that's a huge distinction. An SKO doesn't leak random noise. It emits coherent Phi radiation.
Coherent, meaning organized.
Think of it like a laser beam compared to a regular light bulb. A black hole's honking radiation is the light bulb. It's messy, random, thermal noise. It carries no decipherable structure. The SKO's radiation is the laser. It is highly organized, or phase-locked, meaning the light waves march in perfect lockstep, carrying a readable code. This coherent radiation preserves the exact history and quantum state of every piece of matter the SKO ever consumed.
That paints a vastly different picture of the cosmos. But, I mean, if we want to separate this elegant math from pure science fiction, how do we actually prove it? Einstein's theories were proven by observing eclipses and planetary orbits. How could astronomers test if SKOs are real and black holes are fake?
Well, the SKO framework makes very specific, testable predictions that current and near-future technology can actually look for.
Okay, like what?
The first major test involves gravitational waves. You know, the ripples in space-time we detect when massive objects like dead stars collide.
Right, we have observatories listening for those collisions right now.
We do. And when standard general relativity models two black holes merging, it predicts a clean ring down at the end of the signal. Imagine striking a bell and hearing the sound smoothly fade out into silence.
Just a smooth fade.
Exactly. But if two SKOs merge, because they have actual physical surfaces instead of bottomless event horizons, the model predicts distinct information-encoded echoes trailing the main merger signal.
Echoes?
Yeah, the gravitational waves would literally bounce off the rigid surfaces of the SEOs.
So we would see aftershocks in the data. And if we detect those echoes at specific intervals, it strongly supports the SGO model over the black hole model.
Precisely. And the second major test involves the Event Horizon Telescope, the EHT.
Oh, I remember when the news broke about the first EHT photos. We all saw those pictures of the glowing orange donuts in space. The dark shadow in the middle was supposed to be the black hole.
Right. Under standard black hole theory, that shadow should have a perfectly sharp mathematical edge because the event horizon is an absolute defined boundary. Light either crosses it or it doesn't.
Okay.
But if that object is actually an SGO, there is no event horizon.
So the shadow shouldn't be perfectly sharp?
Exactly. The shadow difference would be noticeable. We would expect to see a fuzzy boundary or actual surface features, perhaps magnetic field lines or evolving information patterns visible within the dark region.
Because it's an active surface.
Yes. The surface would change over time as it processes information, unlike a static black hole.
So when you look at those glowing orange donuts on the news, you might not be looking at a void of no return, but a blurry photograph of the universe's most powerful hard drive.
That's a great way to put it. We can also look at the accretion disks, the swirling rings of matter around these objects before they fall in.
What would we see there?
If the SGO is emitting coherent phi radiation as it processes data, we should be able to detect specific spectral lines in that radiation. Instead of a continuous smear of random thermal energy, we would see discrete, sharp lines of energy.
Like barcodes.
Exactly. Much like the unique barcodes of light emitted by different elements on the periodic table.
Wow. It really redefines every dark spot in our sky. We assumed for nearly a century that gravity was the ultimate victor, that eventually it could crush anything and any information out of existence.
But the mutual stability framework requires a profound philosophical shift in how we understand reality.
How so?
The universe doesn't stop black holes from forming to protect gravity. It stops them to protect information. The stabilization boson exists to guarantee that no data is ever deleted.
Right.
It suggests that information, not gravity or even space-time itself, is the most fundamental bedrock of reality. Every physical equation stabilizes every other, and the preservation of information is the deepest imperative of the cosmos.
It changes everything about how we look at the night sky. And to you listening, I want to leave you with a thought to mull over.
Yeah.
If this framework is correct, and every single quote-unquote black hole out there is actually a stabilized compact object, a Planck-scale supercomputer running at 10 to the 76th operations per second without ever losing a single bit of data, what exactly is the universe calculating? And if these objects are perfectly preserving and processing the history of absolutely everything they consume, is it possible that a version of you, encoded as pure physical information, is being processed out there in the depths of the cosmos right now?
It really forces us to ask whether the universe itself is just one giant computation.
Definitely something to think about the next time you look up at the stars. Thank you for taking this deep dive with us. Catch you on the next one.